This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
What is the scariest story you know that is 100% true? Story one was working the evening shift at a gas station. A man came in looking disoriented. I went to help him out. He had a gash on his head and didn't know where he was. I couldn't see any crashes around, so I assumed he had fallen or something. Normally, we are supposed to stay inside the glass-shielded register area whenever anyone is in the store. I, being a decent human being, went to help while calling the police, shucks, EMS. They got there and checked him out. They thought his head may have been fractured. Took him to the ER. I went back to work. Cops stopped back by for some coffee a few hours later. They told me the guy got hit with a baseball bat while trying to break into a young girl's bedroom and was wanted for serious crimes in two other states. I never left the register area at night again. Story two. My dad and some friends got drunk and went for a drive on some back roads, going as fast as the truck would go as teenagers. My dad was slightly less drunk than the others and eventually demanded they let him get out. They pulled over, and he and one other girl got out. He and the girl started walking to town while the other three sped off in the opposite direction. Well, less than a mile up the road from where they got out is an extremely sharp turn, which they missed and hit a tree going pretty close to triple digits, miles per hour. Two of them died on impact, and the only reason the third survived is because they crashed in front of a house where two doctors lived. The survivor was paralyzed, lost his leg and part of his arm, and was in the hospital for 8 months before passing away. This was in the 60s, so medical care wasn't what it is today. When I first got my permit, my dad took me to that corner to explain the importance of safe driving. It gave me goosebumps thinking how close he was to being in that truck. He said the dad of the driver had what remained of the truck hung up in the center of town for months after, to be a warning to everyone. Story three. This is a hometown story that stayed with me. It happened literally right around the corner from where I grew up, maybe a 2-minute drive away. Judy Kirby caused the deaths of 6 children and 1 adult by intentionally driving the wrong way on a divided highway in an attempt to take her own life. She had been hospitalized for depression, but had also just ended a relationship with her ex-husband's brother, and by some reports was involved in drug activity and feared an imminent arrest. She picked up her sister's son, who was celebrating his 10th birthday that day. She then loaded her 3 children into the car, supposedly to pick up a gift for her nephew. Instead, she went missing with a carload of kids. A short time later, calls started coming into 911 about a car going the wrong way down the highway at a high rate of speed. They made it about 90 seconds before a head-on collision with another vehicle, driven by a father with 2 children and another child along for the ride. The crash destroyed both vehicles. The only survivors were Kirby herself and the child who was just along for the ride in the other car. The scene was horrifying. She was sentenced to 215 years in prison. Story 4. Years ago, when I was 8, my family lived in this big, strange house on the edge of a small town. The school district was in the middle of a big restructuring, so even though we were only a couple of grades apart, my brother and I went to different schools and took different buses. This left me as the last person to leave in the morning and the first to get home in the afternoon, which meant it was my job to make sure all the lights were off and the door was locked. One morning, I noticed the basement door was open and the light was on. So before I left, I turned off the light and closed the door. When I got home that afternoon, the light was on and the door was open again. I just assumed I had forgotten to actually take care of it when I noticed it in the morning. So I went over to turn off the light and close the door. When I got to the top of the basement stairs, I looked down and saw a large, shadowy male figure
near the bottom of the staircase. I panicked, slammed the door, pushed a bunch of boxes against it, and went to hide in my closet. For months, I didn't tell my family because I was convinced I had seen a ghost and didn't think anyone would believe me. Then about a year after that incident, my mom and her boyfriend realized that small amounts of money had been disappearing for months, totaling around $800 to $900, but never more than $60 at once. So we all walked around the house with flashlights trying to figure out how someone could have gotten in. It turned out that someone had been climbing in through a small hole on the outside of the house, shimmying through a crawl space, and coming up into the house through the basement. Realizing I had been alone in the house with this person on at least one occasion was one of the most terrifying moments of my life. Story 5. I'll tell you one that happened to me, or rather, I was a witness to it. One night, I was out at a bar with a friend I was visiting in New Rochelle, New York. We went outside for a cigarette, and a car came flying past the bar. The car ran a red light and started going up a hill that curved. We watched as the driver veered over the double yellow line and smashed head-on with another car coming from the opposite direction. Both cars' rear ends lifted, then slammed down. The car that was following the rules of the road burst into flames. I ran inside and grabbed the fire extinguisher, then yelled to the bartender to call 911 and report the accident. My friend, a few other patrons, and I ran to the cars. I used to think this was just a fictional trope, but I was pretty intoxicated before this happened, and I swear it sobered me up instantly. I tried spraying the fire, but it did nothing. The fumes and heat were unbearable, and all we could do was stand back. The worst part, and something that will haunt me forever, was hearing the woman in the burning car scream as she died. It was the most horrifying sound I've ever heard. The fire department arrived and extinguished the fire. The police brought us back to the bar to take our statements. I found out the next day on the news that the car that wasn't speeding was being driven by a young woman coming home late from work. She was just a block away from home, and I believe she was either newly married or a new mother. The other driver was reportedly a wealthy man who had been drinking. He lost a leg but was otherwise physically unharmed. I don't know if he served time, as I left to go back home a day or two later. I've tried to find the news story again, but I can't. This happened maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I remember it being reported on Low HUD and Channel 12 News. Story 6. Years ago, my now husband worked for an industrial laundry company in their head office when a PR disaster happened that also deeply affected many employees. Their company collected laundry from large hospitals and medical facilities like care homes and cleaned them. You can imagine the kind of heavy-duty cleaning, bleaching, and boiling required to remove biological contaminants. One day, a laundry cart went through the usual bleaching and boiling cycle before dropping out onto a conveyor belt to be sorted for drying and pressing when there was a horrific scream. A small newborn baby's body had been discovered tangled among the sheets. It had been cooked. The laundry workers were devastated. The entire facility was shut down. Police were called, and the laundry was traced back to the hospital to determine what had happened. It turned out thankfully in some ways, stillborn baby had been left in the crib awaiting transfer to the hospital mortuary after the parents had said their goodbyes and covered the baby with a blanket. Somehow, one of the nurses, possibly just starting her shift, hadn't realized and grabbed all the linens from the crib and bed in the delivery room, unknowingly bundling the baby's body inside and sending it to the laundry. The other nurses and parents assumed the baby had been taken by the mortuary for storage until funeral arrangements were made. The laundry company was found not at fault, but the parents were heartbroken, and the hospital faced significant backlash. The workers who discovered the body were provided with counseling and eventually left their jobs. The laundry facility changed its practices, and now each hamper is emptied manually instead of being dumped directly into the machines to prevent such a tragedy from ever happening again. Story 7. My wife arrived at her parents' house where she was currently living due to her father's health issues. She got into the house, no one else was there at the time, and instead of going further in, stopped in the first room that had the computers, which was right by the door. She went into the room and was browsing the internet when one of the cats came in. Her cat, to be precise. Well, this cat was super laid back, loved everyone, and never picked fights or acted aggressive. He would literally lie down and let squirrels throw pecans at him from trees and do nothing but take it. Not that night, however. That night he was growling and hissing intermittently while standing between my wife and the entrance to the rest of the house.
This sweet old cat looked like he was ready to defend her with everything he had. My wife realized this was extremely unsettling, so she picked up her cat and left the house. Just then, she saw a police car patrolling down the street and flagged them down. She explained the situation, and they told, more like demanded, her to stay in the cruiser while they checked it out. It turned out the back door was wide open, which was very unusual. Her parents and she never left it unlocked, let alone open. She found out later from those officers that they were in the area searching for a serial assailant who had been spotted nearby, which was why they were patrolling a normally safe residential street. Super spooky. Story 8. Have you heard of the Nazi so cruel that even other Nazis, particularly fellow SS officers, tried to get him and his unit disbanded and arrested? No? Well, his name was Oscar Durlewanger, and his unit was known as the Black Hunters, or the Durlewanger Brigade. Oscar Durlewanger was an early Nazi Party supporter. He had previously been jailed for being a predator. Eventually, when
this is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help. You save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
When World War II broke out and healthy soldiers were dying in large numbers on the Eastern Front, his old friend Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS, granted him command of a unit made up initially of German poachers, and later expanded to include criminals from both civilian and military prisons. His unit was designated to hunt down enemy partisans, though they mostly targeted civilians. Durlewanger's SS unit committed horrifying atrocities. Some were so barbaric that even other SS units reported them. One example includes gathering an entire Belarusian village inside a church, locking the doors, and setting the building on fire. Anyone trying to escape was gunned down. The unit raped, tortured, and murdered its way across Eastern and Central Europe. During the Warsaw Uprising, they were sent in to suppress resistance. They entered a children's hospital, told the nurses they were there to secure the building, and then assaulted and killed the staff and patients. Survivors were finished off with bayonets. These men were so atrocious that even within the Nazi regime, they were viewed with contempt and repeatedly reported, but rarely punished. Fortunately, by the end of the war, the unit was destroyed, and many of its leaders were hunted down like animals. Story 9. Told this here before, but once more. My friend had a neighbor who was a retired mechanic. They lived in an area with large front lawns and long driveways. The neighbor had a couple of derelict cars parked up near his garage that he occasionally took parts from. He began hearing noises coming from the front yard while sitting in his living room. Every time he looked outside, there was nothing there. He assumed it was a raccoon or maybe a coyote. But the noise persisted. He set traps and sometimes caught animals, but the sounds continued. Eventually, he started hearing whispering voices coming from the yard. He'd search the perimeter, but find nothing. Frustrated, he began calling the police.
Each time they came and searched but found nothing. Eventually, they told him to stop calling and maybe install a security camera. He began to feel like he was losing his mind. One summer night, unable to sleep, he stepped onto the back patio for a cigarette. Suddenly, he heard voices again, coming from the front of the house. He snuck around and arrived just in time to see the doors of his derelict conversion van silently closing. He rushed back, went inside, and called the police. They arrived without lights or sirens. As they approached the van, the doors swung open, and several people bolted in different directions. Inside the van, the officers found syringes and drug paraphernalia. Turns out people had been using it as a place to inject substances. Story 10. I've posted this before, but here's mine. When I was a baby, my dad played on a softball team. It was a typical social thing, beers and pizza after the games, a family-friendly environment. My parents were close friends with two other couples, each of whom had young kids as well. That night, the other two couples had left their kids at one of their houses with a babysitter they were sharing. They invited my parents back to the house for more drinks afterward, but I was fussy, and my mom decided against going, though they would have normally gone. It turned out that my fussiness saved our lives. When the other parents got back to the house, they walked into a nightmare. Two men had broken in, tied up the kids, the babysitter, and her boyfriend, and waited for the parents. They took the parents hostage, forcing the dads to drive them to banks and a grocery store, where one of them was a manager and emptied out accounts in a safe. Then they returned to the house and murdered both families, the babysitter and her boyfriend, including the children. The two attackers were eventually caught. My dad attended the trial and said it was the first time he had ever supported the idea of capital punishment. It still chills me to think how close we came to being part of that tragedy. Story 11. The Battle of Aswick Fortress, 1915. German forces attempted to drive out Russian defenders using poison gas, as the fortress had been a major obstacle since the start of the war. The gas attack succeeded in killing nearly three entire companies. The Germans advanced across the fields, expecting an empty fortress and an easy victory. But from within the fortress, Russian soldiers emerged, coughing blood, spitting out pieces of lung tissue, covered in improvised bandages and chemical burns. They returned fire with rifles and light artillery. The German troops didn't even bother firing back. They turned and ran. Their commanders insisted, "They're already dead. Give it 20 minutes and go take the place." To which the soldiers replied, "It is not men protecting that place, but the devil." Osovyets fortress never fell during the war. Months later, when German forces returned, the fortress was once again guarded by fresh defenders. I know this story is quite different from the others, but to me, it remains one of the most haunting and terrifying. Story 12. I would call it creepy more than scary, but my mom's friend had a small house and lived alone. She noticed weird things: a batch of soup depleting faster than usual, missing eggs, damp towels in the hamper when she hadn't used any, extra dishes in the dishwasher, etc. This went on for months. She thought she was just being forgetful. One day she heard some thumping around in her attic and went to investigate. She found some makeshift living quarters: a small radio, hot plate, sleeping bag, pillow, food wrappers, and more. She called the police, who came to keep an eye on the place. They ended up catching a homeless man climbing a tree, trying to sneak into her attic window. He had been doing this almost daily. He would wait for her to go to work, then go downstairs and help himself to food and amenities. The unusual part of this story is they got to know each other throughout the ordeal, and the man was actually very respectful, just down on his luck. She didn't press charges. Instead, she let him move in, helped him get a job, and he lived in the attic until he got back on his feet. Creepy story with a surprisingly happy ending. Story 13. My mom didn't tell me this story for the longest time. I think just so she wouldn't unnecessarily worry me when I was younger. My parents split up when I was about 4 years old, and my mom and my sister stayed in a small townhouse for a few years before moving in with my stepdad. Anyway, while we were living in the townhouse, probably for less than a year, my mom heard something in her room in the middle of the night. When she woke up to look, there was a man in her room. She audibly gasped and got out of bed, unsure if she should fight or run to our room. She couldn't decide because she was full of adrenaline. The man ended up running out of the back door, and when the police came, they found signs of forced entry. She never told any of us the full story because we were all sound asleep at the time, but she eventually explained more about it as we got older.
Story 14. Before my dad passed away, he once told me a story from when he was in Vietnam in the 1960s. He talked about a mission where he and one other American, along with five CIDG strikers, South Vietnamese villagers turned fighters, were tasked with placing seismic ground sensors along a trail network deep in the jungle. They were about 2 days into the mission when he and two of the strikers split off from the main group to watch a nearby trail intersection. The jungle was quiet that day, just birds, bugs, and the occasional monkey. They watched the trail for about 3 or 4 hours and debated whether to move forward or return to the main patrol. Just before stepping onto the trail, my dad said he saw something strange. Lying near the intersection was a light-skinned black Union cavalry soldier in full battle gear, two pistols, a Spencer rifle, and a short curved club at his hip. My dad, stunned, saw the soldier look directly at him and smile. Then the soldier raised a finger to his lips, signaling for silence, and motioned for my dad to move back. My dad told his men to stay hidden and watch the soldier slip into the jungle, just as he did the same. Less than 10 seconds later, a lead group of NVA soldiers, about 70 to 80 of them, armed with rifles, machine guns, and rocket-propelled grenades, walked through the intersection just 30 feet away. My dad was sure his team would have been wiped out. Once the coast was clear, they quietly retreated and rejoined the others. He reported the enemy movement but told no one about the soldier. He kept this secret for years, only telling me shortly before he passed. He had told his grandmother once before, in the 1970s on her deathbed. When he told her, she smiled and said without opening her eyes, "You saw old Red Tom." Red Tom was my great-great-grandfather, a half-black, half-Creek freeman who was a scout for the Union Army during the Civil War and later served with the U.S. Cavalry. He was known for carrying two pistols, a Spencer rifle, and a Creek war club into battle. Story 15. A bunch of girls in my friend group decided to have a night out and ended up at the local nightclub. I can't remember why I didn't go, but I'm sort of glad I wasn't there, although I also wish I had been so I could have helped. Anyway, they noticed a girl on the dance floor who looked completely out of place. She had on sweatpants and a t-shirt, no makeup, her hair in a ponytail, and a backpack. Basically the exact opposite of club attire, and not something anyone would normally wear to that place. She seemed very dazed, and more importantly, a very large man was grabbing her and dancing inappropriately while she just stood there, unresponsive. One of my friends approached to ask if she was okay, but the man answered for her. He claimed he was her boyfriend and said she had just had too much to drink, but that she was fine. Everyone felt suspicious, but there wasn't much else they could do, so they kept an eye on them. Eventually, the man left to get drinks at the bar, and my friend managed to talk to the girl again. She was extremely out of it, and it seemed more likely that she had been drugged than drunk. The girl managed to communicate that she didn't know the man and wanted to leave. My friend grabbed her and headed for the exit, just as the man came back. He immediately flipped out, got in my friend's face, and started screaming at her. It escalated to the point where he swung at her. She barely dodged the hit. Thankfully, someone had already gotten a security guard, and they were able to prevent the man from hurting anyone. The girl and my friends all got out safely. The girl was still very out of it, so no one got the full story, but she said the man had been following her around town all day. The really disturbing part is that the bar staff couldn't do much besides eject him. One of my friends called the police and gave a description, but they said there wasn't much they could do except be on the lookout, so chances are he's still out there and could try something like this again. Story 16. I moved to another town. I was surprised by people who looked like they knew me, even though I had never seen them before, and everyone around was so rude, despite other sources saying how friendly the people there were. I was even greeted with, "Oh no, you again?" At one place I had gone to for the very first time, I was looking for a room to rent, and one of the landlords told me he wouldn't rent to me because my co-tenants saw you following and stalking them. I thought, what is going on? Am I doing things and forgetting? Is something wrong with my mental health? Then I went abroad for 3 months. Nothing like that happened there. Everything was normal. I thought, maybe it's just local culture. Maybe they act that way to push out newcomers. When I returned, I went to a fast food place to leave my CV. The guy said, "You were here a month ago and nothing has changed. We're still not hiring." The problem was I had been on another continent. I couldn't have just flown back and forth and forgotten about it.
and my bank account definitely wouldn't forget. That's when I started realizing what was going on. One day, I finally saw myself on CCTV, trying to steal something. That's when it made sense. Stealing, stalking, being disliked, it all added up. Turns out there was someone who looked exactly like me, even with a similar hairstyle, which was in fashion at the time. As of now, I've already discovered two people who look almost identical to me. Story 17. I used to run the boilers in a Department of Education building. Apparently, sometime in the 1980s, three people were murdered due to their involvement in a large VCR theft. These VCRs were meant for the school system and were stolen from a warehouse. It was an inside job. Something went wrong. The head custodian was found shot to death, and later the other two bodies were reported buried in Monticello. But rumor has it they were incinerated first. In the boilers, I was responsible for operating and maintaining. There were three operational boilers, and one that wasn't in service. I had no idea which one may have been used. But whenever I fired them up, I was usually the only person in the building, and I wondered every single time. Still, that wasn't even the creepiest part. You have to clean the interiors of these boilers really well. Otherwise, the fire won't transfer heat to the water efficiently. Especially with number 6 oil, they build up a lot of soot. You wear a Tyvek suit, a mask, and climb right into the firebox. I found myself staring down the business end of that burner many times, imagining what panic would feel like. I'm fairly certain those people were already dead before being put in. One time I was in one boiler while another was running. The valve isolating mine wasn't holding, and it started getting dangerously warm. By the time I noticed, I was panicking. I had to crawl out fast. The metal was almost too hot to touch. Definitely a creepy experience, especially knowing the history of that boiler room. Story 18. All right, so my preschool teacher, who somehow later became my 11th grade English teacher, had a super interesting life. Her mother had written a well-known book, her father held a high-ranking government position, but enough about her family. First, let me describe her. She had dark hair and blue eyes. You'll see why that matters in a minute. She told this story every year to new students. When she was younger, she was driving through Arizona on a two-lane road while her boyfriend was following behind her on a motorcycle. For those who haven't been to Arizona, some stretches are very isolated and deserted. She said they were on a long drive. I'm a little fuzzy on the details since it's been 6 years. And she and her boyfriend had memorized the route, but eventually got separated by a few miles. A man in a Volkswagen Beetle started pulling up beside her in the opposite lane. There was no oncoming traffic, and motioned for her to pull over. At first, she ignored him, but he kept doing it, becoming more frantic each time. She thought maybe he saw something wrong with her car, so she pulled into the lot of an abandoned gas station. As soon as she stopped, she got a terrible feeling. The man was acting suspiciously and insisted that there was something wrong with her headlight. He told her to get out so he could show her. Meanwhile, her boyfriend, who had been behind her, caught up and saw her car parked at this creepy location. Just as she stepped out of the car, her boyfriend began pulling in. The man saw him and immediately jumped into his car and sped off like his life depended on it. Later, they learned that the man had been identified as Ted Bundy. She said she couldn't imagine what might have happened if her boyfriend had been just 3 miles further behind. Story 19. 100% true, as it happened to me. It's probably more spooky than scary. I'll let you be the judge. Many years ago, before cell phones, we had these things called pagers strapped to our hips. Someone would page you with their phone number, and you would call them back when you reached a phone. As an on-call technician working in the audiovisual field, my pager would go off all the time. Like most people using pagers, our clients knew that if you followed your number with a 911, that meant the technician should stop everything and call immediately. Although I was always busy, I rarely, if ever, got 911s. One afternoon, traveling from Orlando to St. Petersburg via Interstate 4, my pager went off with a number I didn't recognize, followed by a 911. I found the first exit and pulled into a small truck stop outside Plant City to use a payphone. This took maybe 3 minutes. I walked in, asked for change, and headed to the wall where there were 4 payphones. I popped in a quarter and dialed the number displayed on my pager. It rang and rang and rang. I thought, what is going on? Who would page me with a 911 and not answer? Then I noticed another ringing sound, not in my ear, but from 2 phones over. Another payphone was ringing as an incoming call. I hung up my phone,
and the ringing on the other phone stopped. I walked a few paces over, picked up the handset, and looked at the number printed above the buttons. I compared it with the number on my pager. I looked again, back and forth. Except for the 911, they were identical. I lost my breath for a second, then walked over to the girl at the counter and asked if anyone had used the payphone. She said I was the only person who had been in the store for the past hour. The whole episode took maybe 15 minutes, but I was totally freaked out. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I just wanted to get out of there. About 10 miles down the highway, I came upon a scene that looked like a bomb had gone off. A four-car pileup involving a tractor trailer carrying steel that had come loose. State troopers and paramedics were just arriving. I pulled over to help, but it was mostly over by then. I have no idea why I got that page or from whom, but I'm convinced that if I hadn't, I would not be alive to write this today. Story 20. A female friend in college disappeared from a party at another university in a city about 25 miles north of our school. She had arrived with another friend, who I believe had driven. At some point, she split off to play a game, maybe cornhole or something, and was later inexplicably gone. Phone calls went to voicemail, the police were called, but she had simply vanished. About 10 days later, she was found by a homeless man who witnessed her crawling up to a bus stop in the city, begging for help. She had a broken leg and arm and was in terrible condition. At the party, her drink had been secretly drugged, and she was led off by a group of men into their vehicle. She was taken to an apartment where she was drugged repeatedly, assaulted, and locked in a small room with only a bucket to use as a bathroom. At one point, after being injected with something and attacked again, she somehow convinced one of the captors to let her use the real bathroom. That bathroom had a small window. With the shower running, she managed to squeeze out and fell from the third story into a bush. From there, she crawled to the road and bus stop, where the homeless man saw her and called the police. Several cars stopped when they saw her, making it impossible for her captors to recapture her. Three men were arrested after police used surveillance footage to locate the apartment she escaped from. She returned to our university nearly 2 years later, graduated, and became a nurse. She was obviously traumatized, never went to parties again, carried a self-defense weapon wherever legal, and somehow managed to move on. It was a terrifying story none of us ever forgot. She was just 18 when it happened. Story 21. This one terrifies me. I'm going to be intentionally vague about the details since I thought this was an extremely rare event. Edit. Based on stories I've now heard, it seems this happens more than I realized, and that's incredibly tragic. These events are mostly speculative since there were no witnesses. I'm telling it as it was told to me. A family member of mine is friends with a man, middle-aged, whose wife tragically passed away while walking their dog in a rural area they were visiting. They had driven up to a farm along the road and gotten out when the dog suddenly pulled free and ran off. She chased after it around the back of a barn, right where there was a huge open dung cistern. The farmer wasn't home at the time, but when he returned later, he noticed a strange car sitting there, doors open, but no people in sight. Concerned, he began searching the property. Eventually, he found something that I had never even imagined before hearing this story. The dog had fallen into the cistern filled with liquid animal waste. The sides were too high to climb out from, and the woman must have panicked and jumped in after the dog. That's where her life ended, slowly and tragically. The fumes from such a volume of waste are highly toxic. She was unable to escape, likely lost consciousness, and drowned along with the dog in the cesspool. I can't imagine a more horrific way to die. I think about it sometimes and just hope that no one else ever experiences something like that again. An absolutely heartbreaking and terrifying situation. Story 22. This wasn't just a crime that ended in minutes. It wasn't something the victim endured briefly, and then it was over. Four individuals kidnapped a girl and not only assaulted her, but subjected her to unimaginable torture for, if I recall correctly, please fact check this, 40 days. They assaulted her, inserted explosives into her, used her as a punching bag, burned her skin, left her outside in the freezing Japanese winter on her balcony, dropped weights on her abdomen, and so much more. She begged them to end her life just to escape the pain. Imagine the kind of suffering that would make someone plead for death as a release. When she finally died, they put her mutilated body inside a cement container. Again, please verify this detail. My memory is a bit foggy. This wasn't a simple case of violence. It was as if they tried to drag her through every level of human cruelty and break her spirit beyond recognition. There simply aren't words strong enough to describe how vile and heartbreaking this case was. I highly recommend looking into her story. I usually have a strong stomach for dark stories, but this one truly made me sick to my core. Story 23. I attend a university outside my hometown and rent student accommodation year-round. The lease for my housing ended before my last exam, which was scheduled for the following week. I figured I'd just stay in the university library the night before. Irresponsible, sure, but last-minute cramming is my go-to. I got to the library around midnight, only to find it closed for emergency maintenance. I had no idea why. At that point, my plan was ruined, so I decided to book a hotel and study there. The nearby hotels were too expensive, but I found one that was fairly cheap. I walked about 30 minutes on a long, dark, quiet road. I was already on edge, but when I saw the hotel lights at the end of the street, I thought, finally, I'll be safer there. Spoiler, I wasn't. I entered this old Victorian-looking building and noticed no one was at reception. I rang the bell a few times until I saw a tall, strange-looking man watching me from the top of the stairs. I asked if he worked there. He said no, just another guest. Then he began asking me a lot of personal questions. I responded vaguely and truthfully. He went back upstairs and soon I heard loud banging and shouting. The receptionist finally showed up and booked my room. As I was heading to my room, I heard knocking and more shouting next door. Then there was a knock at my own door. I opened it. It was the same strange man. He asked if I was alone. I told him I had a friend arriving in 5 minutes. I didn't. He asked if he could come in. I refused. He tried to force his way in, but I managed to shut the door on him. About 10 minutes passed in silence before I heard knocking again, this time on another door. I was watching a YouTube video on my phone, and I think he mistook the voice in the video for my friend, which caused him to move on. Then came loud banging, walls shaking, and screaming. I later learned he was possibly a serial offender hiding knives and other weapons. He broke into the room next to mine and tried to harm the guests staying there. Police came soon after and took statements. As far as I know, he fled and may not have been caught. He was a suspect in a prior case. Since that night, I've never risked a cheap hotel again, no matter the price difference or distance. Story 24. My sixth grade social studies teacher once told us a story about how she escaped her father, who had attempted something truly horrifying. It was during one of those final school days when teachers hand out crossword puzzles and relax a bit. A classmate was talking about horror movies, and our teacher overheard and asked if we wanted to hear a real story about her father. Naturally, as a group of bored sixth graders, we said yes. She told us that her father had a serious mental illness and would sometimes snap without warning. One time, he grabbed an axe and broke through her bedroom door. He was just about to attack her when her mother suddenly burst into the room and tackled him. Her mom grabbed the axe and locked herself in the bathroom with the teacher's sister. Our teacher, then a child, opened her window, jumped out, and ran to the neighbor's house to call the police. She said her father later took his own life after being released from jail. The way she told it was calm, but I'll never forget how heavy the room felt after that. Story 25. I was working in a theater a few months ago, cleaning up after movies. I waited for people to exit one of the theaters and, thinking everyone had left, I went in to clean. As I worked my way through the rows, I looked up and noticed someone still sitting at the top row. That section had no lights, so I could only see a silhouette. I felt uneasy but continued cleaning. I told him the movie was over and that he needed to leave. He didn't respond. The area had a known drug problem, so I got a bad feeling and started heading back down to talk to my manager. Just then, the man called out, "You forgot to clean up here." I quickly left and told my manager. We both returned together, but no one was there. I don't know what that person was planning, but it was the creepiest thing I've experienced. Aside from that, I'm a history major in college, and I know a lot of disturbing historical stories. Rasputin, for instance, was like a real-life horror figure. He wandered Siberia, influenced the Russian royal family, convinced the Tsar to go to the front lines, which led to the revolution, started a cult, and may have assaulted members of the royal family. When assassinated, he was poisoned with cyanide, shot, strangled, beaten, and dumped in a river tied in a burlap sack. When his body was recovered, it showed signs that he survived all of that. He died by drowning, trying to claw his way out.
Story 26. While driving from Morelia to Ciudad Hidalgo in Mexico back in the 1980s, there were two roads we could take, the National Road or the Old National Road, known as Mil Cumbres. Mil Cumbres basically means 1,000 hills. That stretch of road literally had 1,000 curves, and many people would get motion sickness while on it. One evening, on our way back to my grandparents' home in Ciudad Hidalgo, my grandfather was driving. He loved taking Mil Cumbres because it had beautiful views and he just enjoyed the drive. Since the new national road was available, not many people used Mil Cumbres anymore, so it was mostly deserted except for a few tiny towns along the way. It was dusk, so soon we would be in complete darkness on a quiet mountain road with few or no other cars. The road to the town took 2 hours, and about 45 minutes into the drive, it had already turned dark. My grandfather suddenly started slowing down. I was in the back seat while my grandmother sat in front, and I leaned forward to see why he was stopping. That's when I saw a huge tree log blocking the road. My grandfather stopped the car immediately and reversed quickly to turn around. As soon as we turned, he hit the gas and I was thrown back into my seat. I turned around to look, and in the dim light of our taillights, I could see men emerging from the trees near the log, some holding flashlights and others with guns. We were about to be ambushed and possibly robbed. But thanks to my grandfather's quick thinking, we escaped. That was the last time I ever traveled that road. Story 27. In college, I lived in a house with a bunch of other students I didn't know at first. We all had our own groups of friends, but over time, we became pretty close. For spring break, one of my housemates went to Panama with some friends I also knew. When she got back, I noticed one of her friends had really bad cold sores around her mouth. In college, infections and other health issues weren't uncommon, especially in the party scene. A few days later, I asked my housemate how the trip was, and she told me this. They kept running into a local guy at the beach who was very persistent about pursuing her friend. She flirted with him a bit, and he met up with them a few times at the resort. Every time he asked her to go home with him, and she always said no, until one night she invited him to her room. The next time they met, he gave her his information and asked her to spend the last night at his place. She didn't go, thankfully. When they got back, her friend started feeling extremely uncomfortable and had worsening cold sores. She decided to go to the campus clinic, and my housemate went along for support. She told me the doctor was shocked. He said he had never seen anything like this in person, only read about it. He asked her if she had kissed or had other contact with anyone local. She admitted that she had. Turns out she had contracted a rare type of infection that had only been documented in very disturbing cases. She had to contact the authorities, and it led to an extended legal investigation. Eventually, they found the man she had been with. In his home, they discovered multiple missing women, tourists whose remains were hidden in his basement. It was confirmed that he had committed crimes involving those victims. Story 28. When we were about 14 years old, my cousin had a wildlife camera mounted on a tree near my uncle's cabin in the woods. It was motion activated and would take pictures whenever something moved, so we'd leave it up for 24 hours before checking the footage. One day we had a family dinner at the cabin, and some of our younger cousins were invited. The evening was great, but the cabin didn't have enough space for everyone to sleep inside. So the kids, including us, decided to sleep in tents right behind it. That night we kept hearing animal noises from the forest, and our younger cousins got scared and went back inside. The next day, my cousins and I went for a hike and passed by the wildlife camera. We checked the most recent pictures and were stunned. There were 4 or 5 images of someone dressed like a lumberjack, with a hoodie, face completely covered, and carrying an axe, walking directly toward our cabin at around 1 a.m. Naturally, the younger kids panicked and ran to tell the adults. Well, it was actually a prank. My older cousin and I snuck out around 12:30 a.m. with a radio we grabbed from the cabin. We played a CD we made with random wild animal sounds, mostly unrealistic ones like tigers and wildcats, which made no sense since we were in the Alps. We blasted the sounds at full volume for 20 minutes. I also grabbed an axe and walked past the wildlife camera to create some spooky images. Story 29. The Van Ornum wagon train was a group of around 45 people traveling to Oregon in 1860. Near Twin Falls, Idaho, they were attacked. One survivor recounted that a 12-year-old girl, who had 4 siblings, grabbed an axe to defend herself and the younger children while they were overwhelmed by a group, primarily Shoshone. She witnessed her parents being killed.
Many people in the group died during the initial attack. For the next 45 days, the survivors moved on foot, hiding and trading for food with locals, never knowing who was friendly or dangerous. They eventually reached a place called Farewell Bend, now just a roadside rest stop in Oregon. There, the group split. Those who stayed at the camp either starved or were attacked again. Those who continued on, including the 12-year-old girl carrying her baby sister, began to starve and had to resort to eating the deceased to survive. At one point, two local men appeared, and the group thought they might be the attackers from earlier. Still, the men offered fish, likely salmon, and the group sent a 14-year-old boy with them. He never came back. The group continued walking. The baby died. They considered eating her, but at that moment, a man named Marcus Reno, who would later fight in the Battle of Little Bighorn, arrived and rescued them. Soldiers later found remains that were believed to be those of the missing boy. About 15 survivors made it out, starving, lost, and with no direction after their scouts abandoned them. They wandered through the wilderness with only hope to guide them. Story 30. This happened about 9 years ago and isn't as intense or dark as most stories you hear, but it's definitely worth sharing. I've posted this before on another account, but here it is again. Bear with me on it. I was an underground technician working on large machinery deep beneath the surface at a mining site. My specific job was to maintain a massive boiler system. We had more than a dozen boilers, each with a few engineers assigned in shifts. These things ran 24/7 because they powered not only the mining shafts, but also a large underground town that housed all the miners and their families, around 20,000 people. If more than four boilers failed at once, power would be cut to the town to keep the industrial sector running. If the industrial sector lost power, the air pumps would shut down, and that would be catastrophic. I remember working on these towering 30-foot boiler stacks and the jury-rigged parts we used to keep them running. No one had been to the surface in decades due to widespread contamination and other dangers. It was a completely self-contained city. We had leaders, workers, teachers, cooks. Everyone had a role. My wife worked at the school where our three children were enrolled. In 3 years, Robert would be 16 and would begin working. The other two were younger. I can still recall every street, every building. I remember faces, names, the decorations in our small home, the kids' stuffed animals, blankets, beds, everything. I was in my mid-30s, full of memories and experiences in this life underground. And then I woke up. I say that with quotes because I was already awake, just not in the way I understood. I was suddenly surrounded by blinding white lights, not the dim orange lighting from underground. There were people around me I vaguely recognized, asking questions. Turns out I had contracted a serious bacterial infection and had been hospitalized with a fever. I was unconscious for 4 days. In that time, my brain constructed an entire world, an entire life, down to incredible detail. A wife, kids, friends, a career, years of experiences. I tried talking to my girlfriend at the time about it, but she was more focused on how sick I'd been, so I never really shared the full story again. I know hallucinations during illness aren't unusual, but this wasn't pink elephants or dreamlike nonsense. I had 30 years worth of vivid emotional memories, a life that never existed, and that realization deeply affected me. It sent me into a depression for quite a while. Even now, 9 years later, it still leaves me with a strange sense of loss. Story 31. There was once a very wealthy individual, some called him a billionaire, who seemed to have connections to some of the most powerful and influential people in the world. For years, no one knew exactly how he made his money or why he was constantly surrounded by elites. But over time, disturbing details began to surface. It was revealed that he had been secretly organizing highly illegal gatherings involving underage individuals who were being exploited. He even owned a private plane, infamously referred to by some as a certain express, which was allegedly used to transport guests for these illicit events. One high-ranking official from one of the most powerful countries in the world was reported to have flown on that plane numerous times, often without his security team. This individual also owned a private island where these activities were said to have taken place. Allegedly, he recorded some of these interactions, not to bring justice, but to use as leverage against other powerful people.
He was arrested once when dozens of survivors came forward, yet the time he served was far from what one would expect for such serious accusations. He had privileges that made his sentence unusually lenient, including frequent visitors, an unlocked cell, and long hours of work leave. Years later, as more evidence came to light, he was arrested again. This time, the situation had escalated too far to be hidden. The day before he was scheduled to testify, reportedly with information that could expose many individuals, he was found deceased in his cell, officially ruled a SUIC, but many remain unconvinced. The story remains one of the most talked about cases involving power, corruption, and unanswered questions. What truly happened may never be fully known. Story 32. A while back, a family friend had a trip planned to Mexico. He went with his wife and their three kids. The trip was going great, but they noticed that in the area they were staying, the stores were lined up in a row and separated by fences that formed alleys. These fences could be opened and would lead to the other side of town where homes and neighborhoods were located. Their youngest son, who was about 5 years old at the time, wandered off into one of these alleyways while the rest of the family was busy inside a store looking for some essentials. After about 2 hours of searching and not being able to find him, they reported him missing. Now, for some background, if you're not familiar, parts of Mexico are heavily affected by cartel activity. A couple of days later, police found the boy's body in a desert area just outside of town. His body had been used to smuggle illicit substances. Some of his organs had been removed to make space, and packages had been placed inside his abdomen. Authorities later discovered he wasn't even supposed to be found. He was intended for delivery to someone. The family, understandably, was devastated. It's been 3 years and they're still grieving. I don't think they'll ever fully recover. Story 33. About 4 years ago, I was driving my friend home from an out-of-state karate tournament. We were taking the back roads of North Carolina. Absolutely nothing around but farmland and woods for miles. It was 2 a.m., but the moon was bright enough to light the road. As I turned a corner, a car pulled out behind me. No big deal, until it raced up behind me and stayed glued to my bumper for miles. I expected it to pass, but it never did. At the time, I was considering going into law enforcement, and my friend was a tough country girl, so we tried to stay calm, but we were both terrified. I started speeding, 70, 80 plus miles per hour, down cracked concrete roads, praying I wouldn't hit a deer. The car stayed right behind me, never passing, never slowing. We debated calling 911, but we were so far out in an unfamiliar area that we weren't sure we'd even get a signal. After 45 minutes of driving like our lives depended on it, we finally got close to her house. I started planning for what would happen if this person followed us into her long, dark, wooded driveway. I told my friend I had an ice pick in the glove box and a pocket knife in my purse. At the last stop sign before her driveway, the road split, one lane to her house, the other back toward our hometown. The other car pulled up beside us in the turn lane, heading toward town. My heart was racing. I truly thought something horrible was about to happen. Then I noticed the writing on the side of the car. Story 34. Before I was born, my parents told me a story about a car crash they witnessed. It happened at a four-way stop. They were driving behind another car, which stopped and then began to turn left. Just as it started to turn, a pickup truck came speeding through the intersection, ran the stop sign, and slammed into the side of the car in front of them. My mom is a nurse, and both of my parents got out to help. The car that was hit was completely mangled. Inside were two young women in their 20s. The man who hit them walked away without a scratch, completely intoxicated. One of the girls died on impact. The other was still alive when my parents got to her, and my mom did her best to help her until the ambulance arrived. At one point, my dad asked about the liquid coming from her head. My mom told him it was brain fluid. Her skull was cracked open, and my mom was literally holding her brain together with her hands. Sadly, she was pronounced dead on the way to the hospital. The most heartbreaking part? The drunk driver had connections in law enforcement and ended up with only a minimal sentence. Later, the family of the girl who was sitting in the passenger seat knocked on my parents' door and asked them to testify. They were suing the family of the driver, apparently out of desperation for money. My parents refused. Story 35. So this happened about 5 years ago. I was living with my grandmother at the time. Long story why, but the short version is that I was working during my 2 years off before university, and my parents lived a 45-minute drive outside the city.
Renting a place and insuring a car was way too expensive for a 19-year-old guy. We lived within a few blocks of a huge mall in an area that had slowly become more and more sketchy. Not anything extreme, but enough to feel unsafe. For example, one guy once asked me for a cigarette. When I told him I didn't smoke, he started yelling and calling me a liar, then tried to follow me home. But nothing compared to what happened one night. My grandma and I were both getting ready for bed when there was a knock at the door. My grandmother had dementia, and even though she was very sharp and could hide it well, she did odd things and was extremely paranoid. It was actually easier to peek out the window than remove all her soundproofing contraptions from the door and use the peephole. That's when I saw a strange woman crouched in front of our door with a large blunt object, something like a bat. My bedroom was right next to the front door and had a low window that opened outward with a crank. It didn't open much, but the woman tried to force her way in through it. My grandmother was terrified, but dementia works both ways. It took me 30 seconds to stop her from approaching the woman and get her into her bedroom across the hall. I told her to lock the door and call the police. The woman kept whispering that she was cold and wanted to come inside and sleep. I had to threaten to cut her hand if she didn't pull it away. Eventually, she backed off, but she continued circling the house for nearly an hour, trying every window. My grandmother called the police again, but they never showed up. Story 36. I was responsible for opening a new office for a former employer. The receptionist we hired was a sweet older lady who always brought in cookies and brownies, almost daily. She said her husband had a sweet tooth and that since her kids had all moved out, she always baked too much and wanted to share. She constantly told funny little stories about her husband. Something he said or did the night before. He sounded like a great guy, and she was honestly one of the kindest people I'd ever met. Or so I thought. A few months later, her adult children reported her husband missing. They said he hadn't called since Christmas and that their mother kept making excuses whenever they asked to speak with him. After some investigation, the police found him, cut into pieces, in her car trunk. On Christmas night, she had taken his life while he slept, used a hacksaw to dismember him, rolled the remains in a carpet, and stashed it in her trunk. Here's the disturbing part. We hired her in June. They found the body in August. That means the entire time I knew her, she had her husband's remains in the trunk of her car. She'd show up to work, bring cookies, and tell cheerful gym stories, while he was literally in her trunk the whole time. Story 37. This happened to my mom a few years after she moved to Los Angeles from Mexico in the 1970s. She told me the story when I was 10 years old as a cautionary tale to remind me that you can't fully trust anyone, even friends. A woman she worked with at the Omni Hotel, where they were both cleaners, became her close friend and would show her around the city. The woman was helpful and outgoing, and since my mom didn't have any family in the country, she accepted the company, despite a few red flags. The woman was a serious kleptomaniac and would steal from work, stores, and possibly even from my mom's apartment. She also had a boyfriend who gave off a bad vibe. He made my mom uncomfortable, stared at her inappropriately, and had a history of theft. He also carried a weapon at all times. Despite all that, the woman continued to bond with my mom. She was fun and helpful, and that mattered to my mom, who was adjusting to life in a new place. One night, the woman and her boyfriend invited my mom to a restaurant. Dinner went fine, and afterward they drove around and stopped to get donuts. The woman went into the store to get them, but she was gone a long time. While they were waiting, the man tried to assault my mom. When the woman returned, she wasn't surprised. She just laughed and told my mom to calm down. My mom managed to escape and ran through the streets of downtown LA alone in the dark. She moved out of her apartment weeks later, fearing the couple might come after her. The woman never came back to work. It became clear that the entire friendship may have been a setup, one that could have ended tragically if my mom hadn't gotten away. Story 38. A best friend of mine had her iPhone compromised back in 2010. She didn't think much of it until years later, in 2016, when she did a reverse image search of a photo that had been published in a literary magazine. To her shock, several image board threads came up. The same person had been posting her photo for years, asking for explicit images, writing crude comments, and distorting her photos to make them appear inappropriate. After 3 more years of helpless internet searches, she got a panicked call from her younger sister. The sister had found a massive stash of voyeuristic photos, videos,
passwords, and pictures of her personal belongings that had been Sualized, all on her husband's laptop. Among the files was a video of her getting in and out of the shower during a family vacation, and another of him committing a disturbing act with her underwear. He eventually admitted he had been secretly watching her for over a decade. Even more disturbing, her sister discovered he had files and recordings of her friends, women in public spaces, and images taken without consent on their honeymoon. Despite all this, the sister returned to him not long after. They had been together since she was 19, so it's likely she had been manipulated for years. My friend turned over all the evidence she had gathered to the authorities. However, the police are still looking into the matter. Meanwhile, he's now a practicing doctor, still married to her sister, and they have a baby on the way. Story 39. Kinda late, but here's my story anyway. I live with my mother, just the two of us, in a fairly large house. One night, I woke up around 3 a.m. because I heard someone sobbing outside my room. I stayed quiet and listened carefully. It was my mother. She was whispering, "Please go away," while softly crying. I could also hear male voices. It was a home invasion. I had to make a decision in seconds. Go outside and confront whoever had broken in, which would be dangerous since I was unarmed, or escape through the window to get help. The second option meant leaving my mother behind, but I believed it was the safest choice. As I got outside, one of the intruders waiting by a car spotted me. He called out to the others and they quickly fled the scene, just as I had already alerted neighbors and the police. Thankfully, nothing happened to my mom, but the guilt of leaving her alone still weighs heavily on me. That moment haunts me. Still, I'm convinced it would have ended far worse if I had tried to confront them. Story 40. I had a sweet, extremely kind friend. She was easily one of the most compassionate and loving people I've ever known. Let's call her Rachel. I always had a soft spot for her. We would talk and text often, but that's not the point of the story. Rachel's mom owned a small shop in the same strip mall where I worked. Her shop was right next to ours. Rachel and her mom would often drop by to chat with us, myself and my coworkers. Everyone adored her. Rachel had a younger brother. Let's call him Tony, who was around 13 years old at the time. He had interned briefly at our shop. He was very smart, soft-spoken, and calm. Then one night, I got the news. Rachel had been downstairs watching TV. Tony came down the stairs, pulled out a gun, and shot her several times. He then started walking upstairs, apparently planning to harm their parents too. But his father managed to wrestle the gun from his hands before anything else could happen. Tony later said he didn't know why he did it. He was expressionless, unapologetic. Their parents were left grieving the loss of their daughter, while now also facing the reality that their son was facing a trial for taking her life. It was unreal. One day she was there, full of life, and the next she was gone. Rachel was a truly incredible person. She's missed deeply.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.